Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and how deeply grateful I am you chose to be with me as we take a look at further questions on goals. I'll tell you about it in a moment. This satsang, this radio program, is being recorded for June 11th, 2017, and I'm very, very grateful for your ear this morning. I hope that this program serves you well. It does for many and many. And I hope that you will become a sponsor, because it is only through sponsorship that we are able to make a radio possible, pay for airtime, radio, TV, everything we do. Yes, everything we do costs money, just like anyone else. And without your support, well, we could not continue. So I hope that you will become a sponsor. And if you are curious about it even, and would like to know a little more about it, come to the website at aspire.org. That's A-S-P-I-R-E.org, O-R-G. And when you get there, there'll be a little button that says support. It's staring you right in the face, believe it or not. And all you got to do is click on it. A submenu will come up and it will say, why support Aspire? And it will tell you all the nitty gritty about where your donations go, what they pay for. And you can even sign up there, and you get lots of loving gifts during the month, the message of the month, access to my commentaries, podcasts, videocasts, and 121 discourses that I did over the years making TV programs. These are special discourses, extremely unique, in-depth, on various subjects from the Eightfold Path to the Tao Te Ching, to Cahil Gibran's work on the Prophet. They're all there, and they're all for you. You can download them, listen to them, do whatever you like. They're yours for being a sponsor. So I hope you will consider the idea and help us. It's very important. Yesterday, I did a program wrapped around one man's questions about what it meant to be in a spiritual practice. Well, believe it or not, we put it up, and no sooner had we put it up than mid-afternoon, he had listened to it on the website, and by golly, he wrote back, and he said I could use his name. His name is Mike. He's from Austin, Texas, and he has three more very interesting questions to add to this, and I told him, you know, I rarely do anything like this, but since his questions were so interesting to me, I had to kind of feature them, as it were, because I think that whatever he's saying here, whatever he's thinking about here, has a lot to do with a lot of you out there, and I think it'll serve you well. First question from Mike. Well, Greg, what about goals? I need a goal to achieve, or my life will run amok. Most people don't use that word amok. That's really interesting. What do you say to that? One of the things, Mike, is that goals do nothing but kind of elaborate and dig into the whole idea of ego and hubris. Once you've achieved a goal, then you've dug very deep inside your psyche, and you've made everything a challenge. You've fulfilled a desire. Now, in the human realm, there is nothing wrong with this. You know, according to human beings, this is what life is all about. But I am saying something different to you. Goals? I have a goal, and I entrench myself in a goal, something that has to happen. I want it to happen. And let's say I go out there and I just work really hard and diligent to make it happen. And I turn around and there it is. And what gets the credit for it? Well, my hard work, my ego looks at it and says, this is what I did. And this is what begins to connect us with the collective unconscious. And before we know it, we're in the pain, the sorrow, the mass of the collective unconscious, and we make our life very, very difficult. From there on, we make our life very difficult because now it's going to be harder and harder to separate myself from the goal and the achievement of it. So the object of the practice is to do what is before you by doing what is within you, to be non-dualistic about it, to achieve a sense of oneness. So if your goal is a within kind of thing where you have to let go of fear and pride and vengeance, get rid of the whole chorus of I am better than or I can be better than, all of a sudden from many different places within us, we start to becoming one. Well, there is a solidification that starts to happen and we start to become whole. But it isn't the goal that does it. It's never about a goal. Goals don't achieve anything. They achieve things in the world, but within ourselves, they become desires. They become ambitions. They become things that make us fall into the collective unconscious. And before you know it, you and I are operating in that collective. We don't even know it. We don't recognize it. We can't see it, but there we are. And we are developing inside of ourselves a life that is filled with all sorts of achievements, but inside we're still hungry. Inside we still are empty. Inside there is still that nagging feeling that, what have I done? What have I joined here? What has happened? And one of the most devastating effects of this, and I know I would get a lot of rap from this from people who are listening saying, I've got to have a goal. Everybody's got goals. You don't have a goal. You don't know. You turn into a ne'er-do-well or whatever. I know. I've heard all the arguments and I get it. But everything has its way and its purpose in this world. And when you find out that everything you've achieved, every goal you have achieved, everything that you wanted, either is lost in death or is subject to impermanence, you begin to realize, what did I work so hard for? What was that all about? Pretty soon, everyone is forgotten, one way or another. In 1964, Ringo Starr, he was a Beatle, was the hottest thing on the planet. Ringo, Paul, George, and John. George and John, sadly, are gone. But Ringo and Paul exist. Ringo and Paul could walk down the street in 1964, and they would have been mobbed. Absolutely mobbed. Probably their clothes ripped off, their hair pulled. I mean, women go crazy. They're nuts. Now, those same two characters could be walking down the street now and nobody'd know who they are. Not a single person. In fact, I read an article about this that Paul and Ringo were walking down the street together in New York. No one knew who they were, and they were relieved and happy, and they felt like, you know, they could have a normal life. But that's time. See, they think of it in terms of time, and that's what they said. Time, you know, makes all this craziness go away. It's really not time. It's how the collective unconscious is used inside of a person, how they let it disintegrate their consciousness, their awareness, their individuality. So these guys worked really hard, did beautiful music, music that will last for, I don't know how long, but music's going to last a little more. And they can walk down the street. They're not being mobbed. They're not young anymore. It's over. The craze is over. Their goals were served, but that's about it. And now they're just an old rock and roll band. They aren't anywhere near what they used to be as far as popularity is concerned. And as time goes on, there will always be people who will appreciate their music. But basically, they're going to be forgotten and passé and new music and what people think of as better music and da-da-da-da. All this is going to get bigger and bigger, and pretty soon they'll just be the B on the B list of rock and roll. Nobody will really, really think about it. They won't know what the feeling was to be at one of their concerts. I was fortunate enough to be at one. And that's the end of it. So Mike, they had goals, and they achieved every one of them and surpassed them. But after a while, after the collective can rub up against it, things start to diminish, and pretty soon those goals, well, they're not high anymore. And you could say, wow, look what they did. They did da-da-da, and people will look at it and say, yeah, it's all right. I kind of like the Beatles, but I like this music or this music, and people will listen to that and go, that's not music, blah, blah. My parents did it with the Beatles. I'm doing it now. It's a part of the collective. So, you know, you can achieve certain desires and have certain goals. And as the Buddha said, it is desire that is the great killer of spiritual work. It is desire that diminishes a person's sense of reality, real reality, authentic reality. So I don't know what to say to you. We could have this argument. I know we could. You know, if you put it in stone and you, that's why people, when they die, they have stone graves, you know, stone markers, because they don't want anything to diminish. But have you ever walked through a graveyard? When I was teaching retreats at Asilomar, I would have every summer, we would go to the graveyard. And I would ask, you know, the group, you're going to be laying in one of these soon. And, what's it mean? Go sit with a dead person. Ask them who they are. You don't know any of these people. Even if you did, so what? They're gone. These are the things that you must begin to realize. Mike, life lives off impermanence. Every goal, every achievement is impermanent. Even our government, even our Constitution, you can see how it's being used and abused, you can see it. All goals turn into the collective and the remains of the collective. And nothing changes. Not really. It all remains in the collective. The next question he asks, is there such a thing then as good and bad karma? It seems that people who do bad things, we have to wait a long time for in order to see the karma happen, or not at all. Mike, listen to me, my dear one. Karma has nothing to do with getting even. It's not about vengeance. It isn't about vengeance at all. So you have to understand that. Karma is not an enemy. It is not there to punish nor reward. Karma is the unfoldment of my energy being made manifest in this world according to the laws that pertain to this world. So you have to maybe consider the idea that this idea of punishment just isn't the way, has nothing to do with it, nor reward. So you do something kind. You do something generous, little something. Probably not a big something, but a little something. And you do it, and it's very, you know, generous. You give little of the much which you have, as Jesus pointed out. And when you do this, of course, you think it's going to maybe offset some of the negative karma. So you think, well, now I can expect good karma, and then nothing happens. And you start to think about it and go, well, wait a minute, I did this over here. This was a good thing, and I'm not being rewarded for it. What the hey? Because it doesn't work like that. Karma is an accumulation of energies that we have developed over many, many a lifetime. It is our karma that brings us into this world. How we come into this world is through the karma of our own existence, the karma of our being. So we come into this life based on the karma we've had in the past. And we start then to develop a life based on these energies, and that includes your mother, your father, your lineage, and all the things that you're going to go through in the course of a lifetime. They're all laid out for you there. And in that collective, you start to realizing you're a part of the world in the collective unconscious. The wise individual realizes their body belongs to the collective unconscious. But their being belongs to life itself, to the bigger picture. You live simultaneously in all sorts of things in your life. One of them being love and goodness, and the other being in the collective unconscious, in what we do as being negative or ugly. The body belongs to what it belongs to, your heritage, your lineage, hence your collective unconscious. And if you take your cues from this all of your life, you're going to miss the meaning of your life. The object is to awaken ever so slightly and to realize there is something operating underneath the collective, something that cannot be explained. It is inexplicable. And it runs and generates its energy from something that we don't understand. And I'll tell you what it is. It is love. Absolute to perfect love. And this thing operates with or without our permission. So when we're talking about love, when we're talking about the goodness of our nature, when we're talking about karma and bad and good karma, it's a miss. That's a terrible misnomer. And I hear people use it, oh, that was bad karma. Oh, that's good karma. No. You know, that's not the way it works. You and I have the karma. And in it is a mixture of many, many different energies. Each energy is trying to awaken me to the truth that there is karma first. And that if we follow this karma and we allow ourselves to awaken to this karma, we can enter into a new world, a new life right here. That's why the Buddha and Jesus, Lao Tzu, all talk about it being within. Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven cometh not with observation, lo here, lo there. For behold, the kingdom of heaven lives within you. It lives within you. Karma is to point my attentions, Mike, upon the kingdom of heaven that lives within me. That's what it's all about. And when I live from that, when I live, move, and have my being in that, a deep generosity for life begins to awaken. And now I'm starting to move past goals and good and bad. I'm no longer in dualistic thinking. And whatever happens on this planet happens. Sometimes ashrams are built. Sometimes they're destroyed. Sometimes certain people come into our life and then they leave our life. We are in tune with the collective in understanding how it works. And then when I'm conscious and aware of my karma, I start to understand the ill effects of dualistic thinking, and I can allow everything to be impermanent, to let it come, to let it go, to let it come, to let it go. And I don't cling to anything. Clinging only makes me miserable. Clinging only shows my ignorance. You do not cling to anything. The only accomplishment you have is the achievement of what lives within you. The rest is subject to impermanence. I hope that helps you, Jess. Mike. Let me go to the next one. Last question. If I don't have the pull, Greg, where do I get it? Ha ha. To get the pull, Mike, you have to have many, many, many things happen to you. And they all kind of congregate around one basic premise. You need futility. Lots and lots and lots of futility. The more futility you have, the more you're going to dissipate your human energies. You're going to become, maybe depressed or unhappy or whatever you get until you can't stand it anymore. This may take hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes, maybe thousands, I don't know. But futility is humankind's greatest teacher. And when you have had enough futility, when you are done with all the futile, crazy stuff that most people find annoying, and you see why it has happened, the way it has happened, you will start to live your life in a different manner. Futility creates awareness in the intelligent person. In the unintelligent person, futility creates determination. And when I'm more determined than I am aware, when I'm more determined to get what I want or find a way to get what I want over what I am, then more and more difficulties are going to arise in me. That's how it works. That's how it is. And most people just simply don't feel the pull because they're not done yet. They're not done making a mess of their life. They're not done with their anger. They're not done with their vengeance. They're not done with their pride. They're not done with desire. They just keep it going and going and going. And they never change. Never, ever change. So there you are. It isn't like, you're born with it. Well, some people are born with it. I shouldn't say that. Yes, some people could be born with it. But typically speaking, over many, many a lifetime, we learn many different things about the who and what we are. So we don't really do anything that is, really beautiful. We just keep reiterating over and over again the futility of living in futile states of hate and fear. And nothing ever changes from that. Ask my students, they'll tell you. They try to replace love and kindness with their anger and their hatred, but it's a never-ending battle because they get gratified for their anger and their hatred, and hence, they don't see that what they're doing is killing them until it starts to kill them and they get sick. And even then, they don't change. They just continue on and continue on and continue on. And they never, ever, ever change. You have to go through these states. You really do, I guess, to come to a place where you see it all as futile. The wiser person sees the futility before they get involved in it, and hence they make great strides in their life and never have to go through all the pain and suffering that we do. Wise person. I'm out of here. Mike, thank you for your phone call. Thank you for your emails. And I hope I was able to help you. And if you ever have a comment, a question, or something I can help you with, you know what to do. Come to the website at aspire.org. Yep. And when you're there, just click on media and pull down that menu and you'll see how to email me. Or you can just email me at greg@aspire.org. It can be that easy. I'm out of here. Have a beautiful day. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.